Do you want to homeschool but are overwhelmed with where to start? My Homeschool Village knows this and has you covered. In episode 13, I chat with Becky, co-creator of My Homeschool Village. Instead of us parents paying for membership from this app and that curriculum, what Becky did is contact the company for each product and bargained for a group rate. With My Homeschool Village, you pay one monthly fee and get access to all the best apps and curriculum like Type-C, IXL, Starfall, Creative Bug, Education.com. There's even Minecraft classrooms, electives, science clubs, book clubs, courses on homesteading, herbal remedies, survival skills, plus a network of support for you, the parents. It takes a village to raise a child, and My Homeschool Village is here for you. And if you sign up with my code, you get 50% off your first year. Go to myhomeschoolvillage.com and use code HOW250, H-O-W-250, for 50% off of your first year. Check me out on my show notes or my Instagram or Facebook page, and you can get the link and code right there. Welcome to this week's episode of The Homeschool How-To. I'm Cheryl, and I invite you to join me on my quest to find out, why are people homeschooling? How do you do it? How does it differ from region to region? And should I homeschool my kids? Stick with me as I interview homeschooling families from all over to help me unfold the answers to each of these questions week by week. Welcome. Today with us, we have Bob Spolgerik from Pennsylvania. Bob, thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited.
I'm excited to talk to you too, because I've been looking for the father's perspective on homeschooling. A lot of the moms that I talk to tell me I had to talk my husband into it. My husband was worried about the socialization. My husband didn't want the kids to be weird. So I'm so happy to have you here today so that we can hear your side. Why don't you just begin by telling us how many kids you have and their ages and what got you and your family into homeschooling?
Sure. We have two kids, two daughters. Our oldest is 15. Our youngest is 12. We had been considering homeschooling for a long time. I worked with a guy who homeschooled his kids the whole way through high school, and that was exciting. And there was just aspects of our life for our children that was difficult with public schools, and it was unique to our situation. And then 2020 really gave us the courage, I'd say, to make the decision and go full bore into it. And so since the second half of 2020, we've been homeschooling. My wife is their primary teacher, but we are also very active in a wide variety of groups, homeschool groups here in Pennsylvania. So there's plenty of opportunities that we're spending with other families as well. So that's our homeschool background, short and sweet.
And you recently gave a talk at one of these events. Can you tell us what that was about and maybe a little bit about what you talked about?
Sure. We're one of the first places that we went when we decided to homeschool was a group in central Pennsylvania called HAHA. It's Harrisburg Area Homeschooler Association. And that particular day, I was going with my oldest daughter because my wife and youngest had to go elsewhere. I was very unsure, but they were very welcoming, very awesome group. It's a faith-based group primarily, and it's a little bit unique for us because we're a little bit more agnostic, I'd say, not necessarily aligned to a particular religion, but they were so welcoming, and there were so many things that they offered that we jumped in with HAHA pretty quickly. Since then, they offer so many enrichment opportunities for students that are homeschooled, and we've attended many form of field trips or other learning activities with other groups, not necessarily a co-op, but, you know, a chance to have a shared classroom with other parents and other students. And then early on, I created the flexibility in my work schedule to be able to try and support my wife and kids in that endeavor, and was showing up to as many of the events as I could. The field trips were incredibly awesome for me, but also to see my kids learning in that environment. And so about a month or 6 months ago, the one of the directors asked me if I would give the speech about a working parent's perspective of homeschooling. It was titled A Father's Perspective, but I've been trying to give an opportunity for fathers who are homeschooling, and maybe the mother's working, or there's a, you know, blended family of some sort. And so that was the topic overall. And things that I covered was in brief, just how important it is to be supportive to, in our situation, there's just days that it's a struggle for all three of them. And me being supportive helps them get beyond that struggle. The idea that with your spouse or partner, in my situation, my wife, pampering her and helping her figure out, you know, things that are challenging and different ways to learn. And then just being that person who can be the driver some days or take them to lunch when they're struggling. Or I add some learning lessons too. That was the second part of the speech, is physical activities or hiking, things that I can contribute, reading books with them or helping, you know, with read alouds, that type of stuff. And then the third was benefits, which there's so many and we can dive into a little bit more deeper when we get to it. So,
yeah, I think that's so important, because things that I've looked at are kids might learn easier from the dad sometimes, and they might learn other subjects easier from the mom sometimes. Sometimes it just takes a different voice to say, even if it's saying it the same way, whether it's a multiplication table or what. But when you hear it in a different voice, it sometimes clicks for us. And I imagine that's the same for kids. Are there times that you come home and, you know, maybe it's like they're not getting it with mom saying it, could you try? Or on the weekends, maybe, or are there certain subjects that you take over that might just be easier done by a different voice?
I'm a big believer in the second voice for adults, for children, for everybody. And with the age my kids are now, it's amazing how my wife or me could try and explain or teach something to them. And then suddenly another adult or an even another kid tells them the exact same thing, almost verbatim. It could be a quote from us, and our kids respond to it because it's that second voice. I also think it's a second set of ears. Sometimes every human gets tunnel vision and isn't hearing what that particular other person, child, adult needs to, how they need to learn, whether it's auditory, visual, or physical. And you being the second set of ears might hear it differently and what their need is and help them hear it differently. So I think there's times that my wife does need that, and it's a great help. But there's also times where we both just throw our arms up in the air and we're like, let's find a third party. And yeah, that helps too. So I think that's a part of the support, is building flexibility in your schedule so that it allows your primary teacher to make that commitment to other groups to do things. And just that knowledge that you're available to be the second driver for something else, another activity that you have to go to or take care of something at home, is a big help for them to be able to go to those events so they can hear the second voice.
And so for us, I mean, I spent the last 15 years in a cubicle, you know, working. My husband has a job where he's more in the trades. So he's up on rooftops or in basements or across, you know, so very different sorts of careers. Now that I've been on maternity leave and been trying to teach my son at home and have the baby here, it's almost more, no, it's definitely more mentally exhausting for me than when I spent my years in a cubicle. And I don't know if that had to do with the job or the mental strain. Like, if I messed up at work, it's not really going to affect many people, or definitely not life or death. If I mess up at home with my kids, it could be a life or death. You know, someone always nagging on you, you know, it's a very different capacity in your brain, what you go through. So how is it for you being at work all day and then coming home, and you kind of do need to alleviate your wife a little bit, give her a little downtime, but you've also been at work all day and you need your downtime too. Do you guys, how do you manage that and make that work without ripping each other's heads off?
There's really two answers. And I think the second one's the best answer. But the first one is you really just have to have, I mean, I've found that homeschooling strengthened our relationship as a couple because I committed to it. You know, I decided, and I'm a big decide and commit guy, and that comes from the business side of my life. But it really is that decision that you want to be an equal partner in it, and really understanding that the stress that that person has, when you're in your cubicle work and you saw somebody stressing out, or your husband's at his trades work and somebody else isn't figuring out what they need to do on that particular job, and he's the senior person that's probably trying to help the apprentice, you don't necessarily snap at them. You welcome the opportunity to be a second set of hands or give them a different perspective. And we often forget that with our families and the people who just forgive us. And it's really committing mentally to being that person who's going to recognize that there's a lot of stress in the situation, and you're just going to step back and be the calm person to help navigate those waters. So it's kind of a vanilla soft answer.
I think that's great. I think that's great, because what I heard you say is look at your wife as you would a coworker that you respect, you know, that you would treat your wife with the respect that you would a coworker, you know, because like we forget that.
Yeah, it's. I think in a coworker situation, you're sensitive to the fact that that coworker could decide to just cut you off.
Yep.
And in your spouse situation, we tend to lose that sensitivity because there's a longer road to go before you're cut off, right?
Yeah.
But if you pretend that that road's shorter and you make up your mind that you're going to be in a relationship with both your kids and your spouse from a perspective of you don't want to create that damage now. You want to, you know, be that person that helps them. It gets easier and easier, and you really start to value the opportunity to be the patient and, you know, kind one, because you get it back too, just tenfold if you offer it out, and it's just a really good way. So
absolutely.
The second thing, though, I think is the more important answer and a big part of what I focused on when I talked to the group this past weekend. My career, I think, has been much more fulfilling since we chose to homeschool. It really actually started before homeschool because there were some other things we had to deal with from a complication standpoint. But I listened to the episode you had recently published with, I think it was Chris.
Mm-hmm.
He was talking about the school systems and really where it funnels the population of people to one way of learning to prepare them for one style of work and one end goal of retirement. And I've been able to open my eyes, and this is the gift I hope to give other people, is that homeschooling allowed me to figure out that I can tailor my life and schedule to what my family needs, as opposed to them tailoring it to what some third party is saying that we need. Being able to do that has created so much freedom for my family to learn when they need to, for us to go do things that we need to be able to do. And I'm not saying that I'm skipping out on, I have a full day in front of me today, but it's prioritizing and scheduling and finding those pockets of time that you can do things. And I think it's true of most people, and it allows you to pursue your passion because you understand that your why is your family and your kids, not some third party career or some person who's giving you money for your time. And your why, when it becomes your kids, allows you to really go after some other why in a career perspective and be successful at it, because you know there's a dependency there, and it allows you to take risks and figure out success in something that you might have been scared of earlier in life when you were just following the herd. So that's a big part of it. And I think there was one other aspect of that I think is important for people to know. In earlier career, I had a big title, big corporate or big job, and lots of people who were dependent on me, but I was dependent on them as well. And the people who were some of the best hires I had were mothers, particularly single mothers, but both. And the reason is they were just so efficient and effective. They didn't have time for water cooler talk, not because they didn't want to. They just knew on the other end of their day, or at the beginning of their day, they had so much more that was still going to be happening. So they didn't really want to waste any time throughout this 9-to-5 experiment that they were going through at that point in time in their life. And they just were really efficient, effective worker. It was about getting the task done and not wasting time. And adopting some of those things that I observed and then also helped support really allowed me to be able to figure out that this time with my family is so precious, and I don't want to waste a single minute over here because I just need to be there for them. It was a big part of my why. So
absolutely. And that's, you know, the struggle I'm going through. We're taught in school, you need to graduate so that you can get a job because you need health insurance. That was like the first thing. You need health insurance. You need health insurance. I ended up getting a job with the government, you know, and then it was, we need your pension. You need a pension. You got to stay here because you need your pension. And okay, like you're just going forward. I need a promotion because then you get a bigger pension. You get a bigger pension. Da, da, da. And I was just talking on the podcast interview that I did yesterday with Becky how, well, look what's going on in France right now. I mean, I know that's just an age shift, but they are taking pensions. I know they took pensions away from nurses over here at a hospital that is no longer a hospital that was bought out by a bigger corporate hospital. And all those nurses lost their pensions. So it's like they're telling you to, you know, work towards this thing that we don't even know that it will be there. And yeah. And then that's not even talking about if the dollar collapses. And so that's what made me really start looking at what if I don't have a pension when I'm 60 because of, you know, whatever reason. What if I get cancer and, God forbid, pass away at 61? Well, what's a good pension going to do for me then, you know?
Right.
What are the things that are really important to us? Well, what I know is that my kids are important to me and the time that we share together. So can we make finances work in retirement and later in life? And honestly, it's funny because the people saying to me, like, you would leave a government job? What about the pension? And I'm looking at them like, you retired and you got another job. You're like literally back at work right now just because you were bored at home or you wanted the mental stimulation or you just enjoy working. So why don't I just find something that I enjoy doing now?
Yeah.
Whether it's homeschooling or whatever sort of other outlet, it's like we're just so ingrained to think that we need these milestones of health insurance, a pension, promotions, and for what? I mean, nothing's promised. So other than what you have today, which that we know we have these beautiful families that we need to nurture and really enjoy the time with.
In working in government, how many people did you see or work with who had a date that they knew down to the day?
Oh, yeah.
When they were able to live off of that pension, and they talked about it freely. Or
yes.
The second aspect that I'm always I just observe is their banked PTO. The amount of PTO they can carry versus how much and what their situation is. So I should say my dad retired from the state government and, you know, he's retired. He's working a second job because my mom's still working. And I think he really enjoys what he's doing and it was to get out of the house. But there's this observation I have of so many people who have that day in mind and between 20, 22, 24, whatever, and that day, whatever the date is that they tell you it will be, they just follow the rules the whole way through and end up at that last day thinking that they're going to now celebrate their retirement. And a lot of people do take up golf or do something that they thoroughly enjoy, but how many people just physically aren't able to enjoy their life at that day that somebody picked for them?
100%.
And look back and miss all the, like they then at that point miss at all those days in between where they could have been living their why, what they wanted to do with their kids, seeing parts of the world that they wanted to see, learning things they wanted to learn. And it's missing.
Yeah. And at 60, your kids don't need you like they did when they were growing up. I mean, they might need you maybe to babysit for their kids or, you know, advice here and there. But it's the whole raising them is over by the time you retire. And it's when you just look back at it, you're like, this is all set up by design. It's got to be because if it was set up logically, we'd be home with our children and then go to work at, you know, maybe 50 and have a good solid 30 years, 25, 30 years there, you know. But I really do think there is a design to it to break apart the family unit because strong families, well, they're more apt to fight back against tyranny and that sort of thing. So that is not definitely what our government wants.
I think there's two facets of it. It's that one is to potentially break up the family unit or really dependency on a third party as opposed to dependency on your family and the people that you trust is a good way to describe breaking up the family unit, dependency on some third party. The second part is, I think that there's a formation of rule followers and not even aware of what the rules are that they're following. I went to public schools. My wife went to public schools. So it was a very hard thing for us to think about it differently at first, because we both were very active in the public schools that we attended, and both went to college, and we met after college, but we, you know, in discussing our shared experiences, it was very similar. It was that full public school experience, all the things that everybody looks forward to. But the part that was missing for me, I think, first and made me canceled at many neighborhood parties and other places was the fact that I called out that public schools just build rule followers so that they get into college, and colleges build rule followers so that they get into post-graduate school in some capacity, whether it be medical school or, and I think that there's, you know, value in those professions, and there's people who are really good, but there's a lot of people who go the whole way through and think that they've made it, but they're at a point where they just have to follow all the rules, and then the rules get changed, like we recently went through.
Yes.
And they're not prepared or equipped to make that decision to break the rules and do something different. And they just keep following along. And at that point, you're either in debt or you can't, you do have to keep both of your jobs in order to, you know, provide for your kids and their house. So you can't pull them out. And it's really hard to break those rules at that point in time. But what I've found a big thing for us in the past 3 years is how many people are struggling the same way that we were with the following the rules. There's more people like that than you know. It's just that they don't know how to speak up and they don't know how to talk about it. They don't even know where to begin. And that's a big part of the reason I reached out, is because I admire the fact that you're putting this out there for people to understand that there's an opportunity to do something different and be different in your path with your family.
Oh, thank you. So, well, and I agree with you wholeheartedly, because at work, it was like, you know, if you didn't wear your mask, I put up in my cubicle big signs about why masking can be dangerous. You know, I was that jerk. So, you know, people were clear that they were not happy with me there. But all the other things, you know, okay, well, then get testing if you don't get the COVID shot. And it's like, I got to test every single week. And then I said, okay, well, this week I'm working from home. Okay, well, still submit your test. Why? That's our tax dollars. Why should our taxpayers pay for me to submit a test to work from home this week? It doesn't make any sense. And well, just because, you know, that's the rules. But if it doesn't make sense and it's wasting people's hard-earned money, why are we doing it? There's no reason to do it. No, I'm not. So it's very eye-opening. And I think there's a period of mourning when you go from, like you said, you were brought up in the public school system, as was I, and college and all that. And then you kind of see the other side to it. And at first, I think for myself, I was like, oh, well, let me spread the word. Everyone will be on my side. And I quickly realized, no, that just gets you, you know, your friends stop talking to you and, you know, people stop following you on Facebook. But that's okay, because then there, for every person who was no longer talking to me, probably five more came out of the woodwork and private messaged me saying, oh, thank God you said that. You know, I'm so glad that you said, I feel the same way. So, you know, it does come back tenfold. How have you seen a difference in your girls from when they were in school to now that they're homeschooled?
So a friend of mine, a good family friend whose daughter is still in public schools, and I have done many hikes together, backpacking hikes. And on a recent one, he was asking, he's very inquisitive about a lot of things in life, but he was asking a bunch of questions about how we approach one aspect or another. And whatever the answers were I was giving him led him to the conclusion that it sounds like we're just building lifelong learners, that there's an opportunity in all situations in life for them to turn it into a chance to learn something new. And it's been so valuable to watch them not think about learning being a 9-to-5, or that this is the time period when we're going to do school and this is the time period I shut it off. You know, it really opened my eyes to the industrial mousetrap that you know, we work in the cubicle or whatever job and look forward to that 1 week a year or the holiday that they say that you can use. And it's really the same trap for school. You know, kids, it's tough for kids to go 8 hours a day and be away from their parents, especially when they're young. It's tough to have to adjust so quickly to so many different people to focus on learning. You're adjusting to so many changes all at once in elementary school, and it really becomes hard to turn, like, let it be a full-time existence learning. And we've watched them really see every situation as a chance to learn and talk about what they've learned. And that's been a lot of fun to see. I think the second part is that they have committed so much to what their respective hobbies are and the things that they love. And they really just go full bore with it. And I think that they were in distraction mode previously by trying to keep up with the other kids with what they were doing or what they were talking about, and removing that having them not have that in their life has really created a focus for both of them in the areas that they love. My oldest is a lacrosse player, and she really believes that she could go in a direction of journalism and, you know, speaking about the current events in ways that people haven't listened. So she pursues it passionately. And my youngest is a dancer and loves to read. And she was so proud to finish 50 books in this school year just on Saturday. And it's great to watch them be so passionate about those things.
Oh, absolutely. So you think you've seen that grow exponentially in the last 3 years? Like, did they have a love of reading and before when it was like forced on them and they were kind of in competition, I would imagine, with their peers and who could read it faster, which then means that you're not actually absorbing it?
Yeah, it was a lack of enjoyment in the things that they were doing, whereas now they thoroughly enjoy it. My youngest with dance, for example, you know, after a full day of school with maybe a half hour in between for playtime with her friends, often didn't look forward to going to dance. And it was only a day or two a week that at that point. And now she's on the competition team and it's close to 6 days a week for 3 or 4 hours a day. And she absolutely loves it and looks forward to it. And outside of the scheduled dance studio time, she's constantly working on it on her own. And saved money to buy a mat for herself, which, you know, was just part of our learning experience. It's something we could have got, but she wanted to work towards it and earn the money. Yeah. And then same thing with my oldest, is every spare moment she's out there with the lacrosse stick, just rebounding or working on something. And it's not a chore to go to lacrosse practice. She genuinely looks forward to going. And it's because she's not overburdened with so many other things in her life at school and with social pressures and those types of things.
And going back to talking about, you know, depending on a third party or the breakdown of the family unit, isn't that so what's going on when if two parents work, our work day is 8 hours plus a commute there and a commute home. So even if school is only 6 hours, the kids are still away from us for a good 9-10 hours just for our work day. Then we put them in these activities that, you know, they should be fun for them. But like you said, and I experienced this when I was a kid too with my dance class, it was like a chore to go. You were tired. You weren't eating the proper foods. So you weren't fueled correctly. Dinner is just get whatever is, you know, McDonald's or takeout, things that are not proper fuel for our bodies. And then you're skirting them off to this one's got t-ball practice, that one has dance, that one has lacrosse, and you're going in all different ways again to then come home at night and try to clean up the house or do whatever sort of like laundry, you know, that you can do, get everyone to bed, you're yelling, you get your teeth brushed, get your pajamas on, and you go to bed, and then, you know, you're doing it all again, waking up early, with getting the shower, and it's like this constant battle of just pushing people to get to the next thing in their day. And, you know, there's the bonding is just totally gone at that point. And there's probably a design to that too. We think that we are, you know, altruistically putting our kids in sports to give them these experiences. And we are, but it's also a lot being demanded of them, especially when they're real young and it's like practices multiple times a week and there's no time to actually sit at home and make a healthy dinner, sit together as a family. As corny as that may sound, there is a reason why it's done. It's to give our kids a nutritious meal, for the parent that's cooking to actually have a little bit of pride in what you're feeding your family. You're giving them fuel so that they can learn, they Absolutely. Can exercise, they can be healthy, and, you know, have this bonding time where you talk about your day. From the conversation I had with Chris, where we talked about how school was only 3 years for like a grandparent or two ago, too quickly it's, you know, into preschool, nursery school, up until, you know, 4 years of college or more, how quickly it went from 3 years to 18 years of schooling, and in what we lost in that short time, this bonding as a family, becoming a stronger relationships within our family, and really taking pride in the foods that we prepare for our family, you know, that we eat, and how important that is.
Yeah, the food aspect is a big one for sure, and it's secondary topic. We can get into that in a little bit. I want to stay on what your main point has been, is that experience. You know, there's a saying that says that people really can't develop a relationship together unless they have shared struggle. And it's an experience with that shared struggle that you have. And a lot of times the busyness of school and work and activities creates those shared struggles for your kids with other people. And you're not able to experience that. And I challenge you or your audience to just consider your best memories as a child with your family, your parents or your aunts, uncles, etc. And I think every one of them you'll find is an experience of some sort where there was shared struggle and a laugh about it, or and you know, could have been an angry moment where you both agreed that it was worth laughing about in the end. Our fondest memories are from those. And your ability to create those shared struggles or experiences are gone if you don't create enough time to spend with your family. Whether it's just as simple as cooking meals, both of my kids have reached a point where they're cooking and learning cooking skills and preparing meals. And I have to step back and let them make the mistakes, because mistakes are wrongly classified as something you shouldn't do or you should avoid. And they're really the best ways to learn. And it's a good way for them. I had to throw out a half dozen eggs yesterday because my daughter made meatballs with one egg and left the eggs on the counter overnight. And it'd be great if we had chickens and they, you know, I think you can leave them out overnight and it's not an issue, or you don't have to refrigerate them. But these were washed eggs so that they couldn't be left out overnight. I did a math problem in figuring this out for the speech on Saturday. And there's, from age 5 to 18, 676 weeks that you have with your children.
Wow, that does not seem like a lot. You said 600?
676 weeks. And if you add eight hours for sleeping, you're basically down to about 400 weeks. And the moment you start them in public school, you're down to about 130 weeks to spend with your children.
Wow.
Of time to spend with, you know, 130 weeks of time. That doesn't include activities. It doesn't include, you know, the 2 hours to get ready for work and go to, you know, back and forth on your commute or whatever your schedule is. This is just pure time. So it's about 10 weeks a year that you get to spend with your children from kindergarten to 12th grade. Whereas if you choose the homeschooling route, you quickly go back to close to 360 or 370 weeks that you're able to spend with your kids. And I mean, it's astonishing when you think that at middle school, you're down to like 40 weeks left if your kids are in middle school.
Yeah.
And that was a big part for me that when they were young, before school, I was working so many hours and on a plane and everywhere, and I was missing so much. I didn't know I was in pursuit of a career and trying to provide. And there was grandfathers and fathers who I was meeting that said, so often you're going to miss these times, you're going to miss this, or you're going to miss that, and take the time to spend with them. And one day I decided to listen and left it all behind and pursued a smaller job with a smaller company just so I could spend time with my kids. And at elementary school, it was still baffling. I still felt unfulfilled because they were letting me know when we could come and participate in the school, which is normal, but it was hard for me. And what was really hard, and it's comical, is that even in those examples, there were times we'd go and sit, and they'd make us sit in the small chairs that they were sitting in first or second grade, while the teacher's sitting in a big chair looking down at us and telling us what our kid doesn't know and what our kid needs to know. And, you know, there's some wins, but mostly this is the area where they need to improve. And it just felt so subservient that you're sitting in these small chairs and listening to that aspect of it. And I have a lot of respect for teachers and the job they do, and it's nothing related to any. I think the teachers my kids had when they were in public school were fantastic and helped them out quite a bit. It really had to do more with me and wanting to be more involved with their life. And I didn't even know it at the time from public school perspective when they were there. It wasn't until we decided to homeschool that all of these other things happened that were so much more fulfilling, and it helped me think about my career differently. So
I agree with the teachers. The teachers I know are phenomenal, but they're trapped in a system that is broken. They're trying to do the best that they can with the tools that they're given. But I think every teacher would agree they are not given the tools that they need to teach most effectively or to handle the classroom most effectively. A lot of the teachers I know are burned out. They are limited on resources. They, you know, are just trying to like keep the kids alive in a lot of instances and, you know, get through the day without anyone right. getting hurt. It's hard. Teachers are wonderful, but they were brought up in this system too. So unless they've been able to step out and kind of see it over, you know, as a whole, they're just going through the motions and they're being the rule followers and believe that they're doing the correct thing. You know, so it is hard. It's a very slippery slope.
Yeah.
But there was something you mentioned about being in the school, because my son's in a preschool right now, 3 days a week for 2.5 hours. And this has opened my eyes. I'm so glad that I sent him this year, because so many little things bother me. And I love the teachers. I do. They're wonderful. But I can't help out in his class because I haven't had the COVID vaccine. So there was a note that said, any parent that wants to help out, as long as you have the COVID vaccine, please let us know. However, I can go when there's a little concert and go into the building.
Right.
So again, why? This is where I have issues. And then just little things I've talked about before, where they put hand sanitizer on them all, you know, throughout the time that they're there in class. They don't ask the parents if this is okay. I mean, it's a chemical you're putting on my kid. You should let parents know, you know, if their hands are dirty, just send them to go wash their hands. It's so these little things that they're doing, you know, I feel that the control has been taken out of my hands and they won't even let me put it back in when I'm aware of it. And I say, you know, can I still come in and teach? Oh, no, no. But we do need you to bring in snack right. once a month. So your food can come in, but nothing homemade.
Right.
Okay, so now I gotta go get store-bought crap. How do you know that guy had, you know, the COVID shot that packaged it up? It's just when it doesn't make sense, it really starts to get under my skin. So if it's like this in preschool, I can't even imagine going up the chain.
It's definitely, I mean, it's definitely eye-opening. It was an eye-opening time period for us all. And the idea that I think that the easiest way, and taken away from teachers, because I think they're just doing what they're being asked to do, is that I asked if our school could just follow the rules that restaurants were asked to follow. The kids could wear a mask until they got to their table, maybe put lunch tables in the classroom, because as soon as you sit down, it's perfectly fine, right? You can take your mask off and as long as you're sitting, but as soon as you stand up. And it's really the fallacies that were presented to us. And, you know, the news is letting us know very little, but some news sources are telling us that the masks really didn't prevent transmission. And the idea that, you know, right. It was a big unknown problem for everybody at the time that it was happening. And the idea that there was going to be a universal solution just wasn't true. And it was unreasonable to expect it to be true, that there was a universal solution. And it's clear now that that wasn't a reality. And we were all just asked to do these crazy things because somebody was randomly spinning a wheel somewhere and deciding that this is what we're going to decide this week. And I don't know. I'm glad it happened because it gave us a chance to make the decisions that we did. And I think that's the part that I'd hope your audience can gather from this is that there were so many things when our daughter, our oldest daughter, was younger that caused us to have to reframe our thinking about things. And each step of that process opened our eyes to ways that the systems we had trusted and relied upon weren't aligned to the goals that were best for her. And it's probably selfish, but I'm a parent and her parent, and it had to be selfish. And it allowed us to make the decision to not go down a path of the traditional vaccination schedule for her or her sister. Then it led to decisions about how we adapted at school. I think that one thing I was thinking about earlier is that we were told at our old house that if we put HEPA filters in, that it would help with this intolerance she had to adhesives, which we discovered. And we did that because that's what parents do, and it didn't help. And the only option was really to start over with a new house that didn't have adhesives that she was intolerant to. As soon as we did that, she improved. And it's a decision that people really don't understand until they're in it. But each of those little decisions led us to where we are today with a big and fulfilling life with our kids and an opportunity to spend a ton of time with them. So for those who might be listening and have struggles, I challenge you to really look at those struggles as an opportunity to think differently and do things differently and discover people who had the similar path. Because as soon as you start having those conversations with people who are shy about talking about it because it's just not the norm, you'll uncover a wealth of information and ways to do things differently that can be really beneficial for you, your family, your relationships. And it is kind of a divorce. I think you mentioned earlier that there's this mourning period that does happen, and it's tough. But at the other side is a lot of fulfilling moments and great opportunities.
I agree. That was very well put. You go through almost like a little anxiety, a little depression. But now that I'm kind of through the murky, you know, it's like, okay, what can I do though to... You have anxiety because you don't know what to do. So what can I do? And it was like, all right, well, let's look into homeschooling and have our kid know what we want them to know. And also the whole bonding aspect of it. How could we live if we didn't need to be dependent on the government or a third party? And I think we've kind of always been groomed to think, well, you're self-sufficient if you're not on welfare or food stamps, those sort of government assistance programs. But now my understanding of self-sufficiency is so much beyond that. It is being self-sufficient is like you don't need the government to put, you know, cereal on the shelf or milk or, you know, anything on the shelf at the grocery store. You can find a way to live if you had to, if there were nothing on the shelves at the grocery store. So then it turns into, okay, well, how could we eat if we had to? We can grow food, we can hunt, you know? So, okay, well, do we know how to do any of that? No. All right, let's figure it out. I mean, my husband might, but it's like, again, so quickly these values and trades, knowing how to do these things, have been lost because most of our grandparents or parents or grandparents knew how to do that. They had to. That's how they grew up, was doing it. My grandmother grew up in Poland. Unfortunately, she passed away when I was 8, so I didn't get to glean those, bits of information from her. But how could we survive without heat? You know, can we make a fire? Those sort of things where it's like, even if you didn't need to use them, you don't know that your kids or your grandkids or your great grandkids aren't going to need them. So if you don't learn how to do it, you can't pass it on to your kids. They can't pass it on to their kids. And then you're going to have a whole lot of people dying off eventually because the way things are going are just not sustainable.
Yeah, it's definitely a part of homeschooling for us that we've been able to explore. my wife found a curriculum that she was able to, well, it's actually, there's two things. Each beginning of each semester, a couple months before, there's a couple different layers of curriculum that she'll outline for the kids, for them to kind of choose a path of which direction they want to go in. For example, last spring, it was entrepreneurial studies, where they were learning just about different entrepreneurs, how they became entrepreneurs, their lifestyle, but all of the lessons around it were related to what it takes to be an entrepreneur. This past semester, it's been homesteading and the things that go into being a homesteader. So from a historical perspective, it was learning about the westward expansion, life on the prairie, but everything that's related to it. And there was an opportunity for me to inject a lot in this lesson because of my passion for backpacking and living in the woods. I did grow up with a family that farmed and hunted. So sharing those experiences with them and the books that we were choosing that were going to be part of the lessons were outlining, like Gary Paulson's book, Hatchet, was a fantastic book for us this semester. I don't know if you remember it, but it just teaches these basic lessons of things that we're not that far removed from. There's still a large generation of people who grew up with that as a primary way of living. And we are at risk of losing it if we don't expose our kids to it today. And I'm so thankful that we, you know, have been able to give them a chance to learn math, English, history, while also learning about homesteading and the physical acts that go into it. Planting at this time of year versus in the fall, or putting garlic in the ground in the fall. There were so many lessons that have just would have never happened if we didn't take this pause. And I think that part of the homeschooling experience, where you can guide your kids, or your kids can guide you as well, is so valuable.
What do you say to the people that when you said, we're going to homeschool, I'm sure you got some pushback somewhere. Most people do. What were the things that were said, and what was your response to them?
In public school, when you're in public school, part of the normalization of it is everybody talks about the same five things. You know, what grade, what school district, that type of stuff. And when you're not in public school and you're homeschooling, there's a topic of five things that come up as well as what about socialization? Are you going to put them back in? And a couple other things. But the big question is, you know, how are you going to do it for my wife, because she wasn't a teacher before. And, you know, how do you do it with the chaos? Because so many parents look forward to that time in the fall when their kids go back to school so they can get time back, right? And the responses right away are that it's I'm the biggest cheerleader for it, because it's so fulfilling to know that they're just right downstairs right now learning their school lesson, and my wife's putting it together and she's learning as she goes. The socialization part of it is such a misnomer. There's so many opportunities, more, I believe, than public school, but you just have to be willing as a parent to invest the time to commit to those things, like the field trips and the activities with other homeschool groups. And then the activities after school that other kids are going to. And with my 15-year-old, the questions are, what about sports teams, since she's so passionate about lacrosse? Well, she can play on the high school team. She can play with the state provides that opportunity for a homeschooler to play on the public school team. And it's fortuitous that the head coach of the high school team is also a homeschool mom. She homeschooled her four children and had tremendous success with them moving on to the next level and doing well. And she's a homeschool evaluator for the high school level. So there's great opportunities for kids to participate in school activities even while they're homeschooling. That I think it summarizes the big questions at this age. The young age is just the secondary things about dances and drama class, or what do they call it? Talent shows. But we, again, have all those things with the local homeschool group that we participate in. I emceed a comedy night that they did for the teenagers, where they were invited for a holiday party and were challenged to do comedy acts. It was improv type stuff, and it was a lot of fun. So it's just, there's so many, there's more opportunities than we can even attend. And it's surprising once you're in it, but you become so aware of it. But I can understand why people ask the question, but it becomes easy to give them an answer afterwards and tell them. I think people can see the passion I have for it too. And I'm very proud of my wife for the work that she's doing, my kids for the effort they put into it. And I just don't think there's a way to look back at that point.
Ian, you brought up something interesting too. I talked to two people who said, you know, when you have the fear about not going to not experiencing prom, Anna that I interviewed is a 17-year-old about to graduate from homeschooling. And she goes, well, I was invited to a prom. She says, I just didn't want to go. And then the woman, Becky, that I talked to, she said the same thing. She goes, my daughters all went to proms. They just went, you know, to the local school. They went as a guest, as, you know, the person invited. So it doesn't have to be that is not going to be their experience. And also, like you said, with the comedy show, what's stopping you with Facebook and all that these days, putting something out there in a local homeschool group saying, I'm going to put on a prom, you know, let's rent out this hall. Let's get, you know, the photographer and get the dinner for the kids and, you know, DJ or something. And if you had, you know, 20 families sign up for that, you could give them a prom and it probably would be more fun anyway to do it that way. You know, like in New York, we can't be part of the school activities. Homeschoolers are forbidden. So
it's unfortunate.
But what's to stop? And I know that parents have done this. Yeah. What's to stop us from saying, let's create a lacrosse team then, you know, we can have a couple different ones and compete all over New York, you know, in lacrosse for homeschoolers. So there are ways to do it. And as bad as social media can be sometimes, it also is wonderful in that it gives us the opportunities now that maybe a decade or two ago, parents that were homeschooling were a little bit more like left out to the wolves, you know, trying to figure out how to get these group activities going. It's never been easier. And like you said, there's probably more now.
Yeah, there's three or four proms this season that my oldest daughter could have attended with homeschool groups. She has a prom dress. She went to a prom last year. She skipped a prom, one of the proms this year for her birthday party and chose another one. And there's amazing amount of number of opportunities to be able to do that. And I think that there's fewer opportunities in rural settings, but what we found is that our kids are meeting kids from hour to 2 hours away with the groups that we're affiliated with that come for specific activities, and they're connecting in social media in that regard. Social media light, I'll call it, because there are these dangers with social media, and I think it's something that kids and parents should avoid. But there's opportunities for them to stay engaged with kids from other neighborhoods and places than you could ever imagine, as opposed to just, it's always funny to me that I don't know if you're living where you grew up, but I'm living close to where I grew up. We're living where my wife grew up. And we all choose to just continue to live where somebody else before us chose to live. And you lack these experiences from people who live in other places, other cultural settings and whatnot. And while it offers so much opportunity for reunions and long-term friendships, it closes doors for those experiences with other communities and other places. And that's a big part of what my kids have been able to gain as well. They both have friends that have been to their birthday parties and whatnot that live 3-4 hours away that they've met through the opportunity to homeschool, and they've become really good friends with through phone conversations, emails, etc. And their parents have made the commitment for that to bring their kids to these events and just so they can spend time with our kids. And it's really cool for them to gain those relationships in ways that they wouldn't have if we stayed the traditional route.
Right. It's worth it to take the longer drive, put in a little bit more effort when you know that the family has the similar values as to your own as well. You know, not to say that you're trying to make your kids all cookie cutter in your beliefs, but hey, these are our values. If my kid sees it in another family, you know, we're molding them too to how we want them to end up as adults. So it is nice to have them around people with these similar values. What they choose to do with it later on, that's their own deal. But when you send them into public school, we are meshing everything.
I heard you say on another episode of your apprehension about it. Obviously, it's limited because you've started this show and you've talked to so many people, but because it's maybe not something in your wheelhouse or something that is that you're it's just that uncertainty, right? And I think that one of the areas that I think is most important to share with your listeners and you is that, like, one of the things my wife found was this very active group of other parents, mothers primarily, but parents who were willing to offer avenues for assistance. And it led to her creating a small business with two of her friends that she's met, where it's an enrichment program that they created twice a week or once a week on Tuesdays for other homeschool parents to enroll their kids. And it's related to the arts primarily. You know, think of painting and drawing and photography and cooking and those types of things. And it's been an evolution for her to be involved with that and coordinating with two other parents. And then, you know, 14 to 20 other kids coming from other homeschool places. And our kids have participated in these types of enrichment programs at many places. And there's just so many available. And we're a small community. I mean, not a very big metropolitan area. It's not the smallest metropolitan area, but I imagine there's just so many available in so many places. And I just think that's an important message for people to know about. Those things are there. And then also when you meet other people and you start to gather them like assets, it's a horrible way to put it, but they are. It's valuable assets of people who are good in other areas that can help you with things that you might not be your strengths, and building a new business out of it is a cool thing to happen.
Absolutely. I follow her on Instagram. What is her Instagram page?
It's Salt and Peppermint. Salt underscore and underscore Peppermint.
Okay. And does she put the activities that she does in her program on there?
I don't think she does on her personal page. They have it's Thrive Space is the name of the other space. But she does put a lot of the things that we do with the kids from other groups on there in stories, okay. Mostly. Instagram has I don't know what it is. It's a little bit foreign to me on Instagram. I don't have a very active Instagram page.
Me neither. I've been told I have to get going on it. And I need like a 16-year-old to just sit in my house for a week and teach me what to do.
I'm always impressed with what Jess, my wife, does on hers.
What else did you want to touch base on today? Because now that we're up on the hour, I want to make sure that we get in everything that you wanted to talk about.
I think that the closing message I'd offer is that from the career perspective, I really think that if that's a fear for people, that it's a good time to reevaluate if you've made the right career choice, and if there's something else that's more of a match for what lifestyle you need for your family, because your kid, that going back to that amount of time you have with your kids, it's a really smart decision to figure out the career aspect so you can spend time with your kids now, because it's not going to be there forever, and it is extremely valuable. And in any situation, no matter what it is, your children need you. That's the biggest message that I think I could offer, is whether your spouse or your wife is taking care of the teaching part of it, you still need to be an active co-parent for your kids, and more importantly for your spouse. I think there's just a lot of value in being there and being present, even if you maybe don't have anything to offer from an educational perspective. They will still need it and value it tremendously. And I think that figuring that out is one of the biggest steps that a person has to take in order to make it work out well. And then I think the second biggest thing is just, if you see somebody or know somebody that is already there and you're considering it, take the time to ask them about it. Most people they might have a little bit of a wall because they're not sure which direction you're coming from, but once you have an opportunity to talk to them about it, you'll gain so many additional resources, and they're pretty typically willing to help somebody else navigate the waters. We've found so many people willing to help us out through the journey, and in turn, we've helped so many people out as well. And it's just an important conversation to have if it's something you're considering, because it will create a great relationship for you and your family overall.
Yeah, one that you will not regret at the end of your life on your deathbed. You think about, you know, the days that you had here on earth. That's really the only thing that we're guaranteed. The only thing we know is today is here. It exists now. Can't think about retirement in terms of stick it out till you're 60. It was 55, 62, 67 now. But, you know, start thinking about what's important and guaranteed here today.
Show me a quote where somebody on their deathbed said, "I spent too much time with my family." Oh, I wish I would have spent less time with my kids.
Oh, that's a good one. Thank you so much, Bob, for being here. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for taking the time and investing your time to get the message out to people. I'm happy to participate and glad to see someone who's spending the time doing this. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of The Homeschool How-To. If you've enjoyed what you heard, please consider helping me out by sharing this podcast with friends, with your homeschool community, and even to your favorite homeschool group Facebook page. As a new podcast, we're really trying to get our episodes out there so that we can keep going. Also, if you'd like to be a guest on the show and tell us about your homeschooling experience, email me at thehomeschoolhowto@gmail.com or visit thehomeschoolhowto.com and send me a message through Facebook or Instagram. Thank you for your time and for your love of the next generation. We'll see you next week.